ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Right, so CV's in now, cover letter's done. Did I answer all the questions?
We appreciate the time and effort you have invested in applying. While we received an overwhelming response from many highly qualified candidates, we regret to inform you that you have not been selected for this position.
What? But I've literally done this job before. What could I have possibly done differently?
You have applied. If your experience and achievements match the role's requirements, we'll be in touch soon, Rockstar.
You better not ghost me. Why is it so hard to find a job? Is it me? Hello, I'm Lisa Leong. Welcome to This Working Life on ABC Radio National, helping to make your work life better. If you're looking for a new job and it's feeling tough, there are reasons for this. Harihara Priyakannan is the Chief Data Scientist at Australian research firm The Demographics Group. She's been digging into the data for us. G'day, Hari.
Hello, Lisa.
So, Hari, what do the stats say? How tough is the job market at the moment?
So, to sum it up, in 2022, if there were 100 vacancies, there were 80 applicants. But today, if there are 75 vacancies, there are about 160 applicants. So that's why finding work has become dramatically harder. And there's ABS data that confirms the same. So the job vacancies from ABS shows that it fell by 2.1% over the quarter and 30% down from the 2022 peak. So we're still about pre-COVID levels. So the huge labor shortages that we were experiencing after COVID are over. So the market hasn't collapsed, but it's simply normalizing.
Okay, so this feeling that we have that the job market is tough, it sounds like it's borne out in the data. Do we know deeper down what's driving this, Hari?
So there are a number of reasons for it. So the first one would be the economic climate that we are currently in, the higher interest rates. Then we have the global uncertainty, the Middle East conflict, and the trade uncertainty. So businesses are waiting before expanding. So there's just simply fewer roles available. And the other thing is because Australia is aging and we have more people staying in the workforce for a longer period, there's not enough roles opening up because not many people are retiring. So if you look at it, there are fewer jobs in the churn, and that is one of the major contributors to why we're seeing the difficulty.
Are we expecting this trend to continue?
It could continue because right now we are experiencing the highest number of graduates or university or entry-level applicants that we ever have because we have so many international students in that age group that's coming in. So we have more people. But what's happened is there is a lot of demand, but the demand has shifted from where it was a few years ago. So traditionally, there was a lot of demand for professional services, ICT jobs, finance roles, technology, marketing, and admin. But now it's shifted. Now we need more nurses, aged care workers, healthcare workers, because we have an aging population, but we also need teachers and childcare workers and construction workers and engineers that support our infrastructure growth so that it aligns with our population growth.
And I've got to ask, are we seeing the effects of AI yet?
Not yet. So AI does not really replace people. It just replaces tasks. So if you were doing 10 tasks by yourself, you might be doing 7 by yourself now, and AI might be doing 3 of them. But that does not cancel the need for human labor.
And then in terms of the statistics as well and the data, you mentioned the tough economic impact. Is this just a normal part of this package, this tough economic climate that we're in, Hari?
Historically, when we've seen whether it was the GFC or the pandemic, the labor market has always responded in a cautious way similar to this. So I think it's one of those times where we just have to wait and just wait for the storm to be past us.
We've heard of this trend called job hugging, and that's where people are really just trying to hang on to their jobs. Is that also reflected in what you're seeing?
Yes, we see that in the data. Job mobility has reduced, especially in certain fields like ICT and finance and banking. There is a more difficulty level to find new roles, and we see that happening. So people are also cautious about moving roles because they are simply scared.
Okay, so you've described where we are now. Can you do some crystal ball gazing for me, Hari? Just like a weather forecaster, what can you see on the horizon for us?
So right now we have two labor markets, like I said. So one is the white collar jobs, but what we need is actually engineering, construction, healthcare, and mining. And the sooner we realize where our demand has shifted, I think we will eventually, or the market will adjust itself towards that, and we will see people responding to the labor market more, and it will ease when all the global conflict eases and businesses have more confidence to expand and to just more confidence in the future.
Hari, you haven't mentioned radio presenters or producers yet. Where do they sit in the statistics?
You guys are safe.
Good answer. Thank you so much, Hari.
Thank you, Lisa.
Hari Hara, Priya Kannan is the Chief Data Scientist for Australian research firm The Demographics Group. You're listening to This Week in Life on ABC Radio National. You're with Lisa Leong. We're looking at why it's feeling harder to actually find work at the moment. In the first 3 months of the year, over a million people were actively looking for work. And according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, the biggest issue for people is finding work that actually matches their skills, which is what Hari was talking about. Nick Kohler is the CEO of RMIT Online and the co-chair of Consumer Group Choice. He can share the tools of the trade for best positioning yourself for a new job. G'day, Nick.
Hi, how are you going, Lisa?
Good. In your experience on the ground, is it harder to find a job at the moment?
Yes, it is. You know, what we're seeing in the market, and you would have heard from Hari, is that there's, you know, around 1.1 million people looking for work, and I think circa about 300,000 vacancies. The big mismatch is actually around skills. So the skills required have shifted while people have been looking for work. And that just makes it harder, I think, for people to find a job, find jobs that match their skills. So, yeah, I would say that right now it is harder, and coupled with the anxiousness. And as you pointed out, job hugging, there's just not a lot of movement.
Okay. What skills are we talking about in terms of mismatch?
Well, I think, you know, the big one that you mentioned was AI skills, but also in terms of where the economy is going, you know, healthcare and some of those other jobs. But in terms of the sort of AI skills mismatch as well, that's actually quite big. We see a lot of jobs being impacted by AI, and probably a lot of job seekers feeling that they don't have the requisite skills to actually jump into some of those new AI roles. So that's probably one of the biggest mismatches we're seeing, very much like the digital divide we saw, you know, a few years ago.
And if I'm someone looking for a job, has the market moved on in terms of what employers are seeking?
The market's moved on, I would say, a little bit. I think employers are asking for particular AI skills, but what they're also after is the skills, experience, judgment to use it well. And I think that's one of the things that, when if I think about job seekers who have got experience and skills, this is where they can really differentiate themselves, because they bring, you know, background knowledge to the use of the tools. And I think, you know, what we've got is not only a mismatch in terms of the skills people might have or perceive they've got, but also the way employers are positioning these roles as well.
All right, Nick Kohler, so why is it so hard to change industries midlife?
I think a lot of it has to do with perception on both the employer and the employee side of things. So, you know, that sort of mid-career professional, 30, 35 to 40, has experienced an industrial way of getting a job, which is, I'm going to do a three-year degree, it gets me this job, and I'm going to get it done. We're working in more of a networked industry now, or networked environment now. So really it's about, what are the specific skills that you need to bridge from one job to another? And research we've done in the past has shown it's very much as little as one or two skills to move from one job or family to another. So from, you know, being an accountant to being a cybersecurity specialist, it's probably only a couple of skills. It's not a master's. It's not a full degree. So I think it's for the employer, you know, what are the specific skills you need and how do you actually get those, you know, get those specific skills? And for the job seeker, it's really about, what's the job? what are the practical gaps, and how do I get those? How do I fill those gaps as fast as possible? And generally, it's around sort of short courses, experiential learning. It's actually proof that you can do it.
Because in the past, we're a little bit obsessed about what industry we're in. And what you're saying now is, okay, so yes, you're in an industry. Deep down, what are those skill sets that you have? Yeah. Then have a look at what the job market is opening up in terms of industries, new and old, where there are opportunities, more opportunities, and then you're actually trying to transition that way.
Absolutely. And there's a bit about looking beyond also practically what's being asked for. I think in part of the research, it showed that there were quite a lot of jobs asking for AI, and they were very, very technical in their in what they're asking for. But the big gap we're hearing from employers, and we see in our research, is actually applying critical reasoning, thought, experience, judgment to AI tools. And that's what the mid-career professional has.
Have the job ads caught up with this new concept? Because usually they're saying you need 5 to 10 years of industry experience.
No, I don't think so. I don't think they've actually caught up with the hiring managers as well and what the hiring managers want. When we go and speak to sort of our clients in workforce development, a lot of them are saying, actually, I just want someone who's got a skill, can prove the skill and has done it. They're not necessarily saying I need someone with 5 years experience or 10 years experience. So it's not across the board, but I would say that the way people are writing job ads are inaccessible and really not facing that kind of new reality, which is that people will have 5 or 6 different or 10 different careers in their lifetime.
Okay, going back to a job hunter's perspective then, what is something that you wish current day job hunters would do or know right now?
I would say it's what you just said there. It's pigeonholing yourself into either an industry or a role, as opposed to saying, actually, how do I step out of this and what are the steps I practically need to take? And then think about that in a very fast and agile way. This is not about doing an industrial 2 to 3 year degree. Again, it is about what skills can I build on and how do I get the role? So I think it's really practically thinking about those skills gaps, as opposed to, looking at it and saying there's this big, daunting reinvention I need to have. No, you've been successful in your career, you've got great experience, you've got great judgment, work on that.
So I don't necessarily need to go back and get a 3-year degree?
No.
Micro-credentials?
Micro-credentials, absolutely. So that sort of fast-paced learning, it's, learn it quickly and apply it quickly. And that's how we build a lot of our courses at RMIT Online. It really is about applied learning. And, work with industry on that. Now, I'm not saying that the 3-year degree isn't useful. Like, if you want to move away from being an office receptionist to being a vet, then you need that. But I think for some of those roles, really micro-credentials fill a good, credible gap.
Let's define micro-credentials for people who haven't heard about it.
I prefer to sort of think about it in short-term learning, but, it's got many names. If you think about let's say 3-year degree, you're going to pick up 200 skills. And then in any year, you're going to pick up, sort of 80 skills. And then in any subject, you're going to pick up kind of 60 skills. And so the question for a micro-credential short-term learning is taking it even finer and saying, over this next 6 weeks or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you're going to pick up these 2 or 3 skills. And so the idea is you learn it, you prove you've learned it, then you apply the learning, and you can apply it really fast, and the benefit is that if you can show you've learnt it, prove you've learnt it and actually demonstrate it, that sort of learn-to-earn time frame becomes a lot shorter.
How do we know which skills we need?
Yeah, well, I think that becomes, for a lot of people out of work, I would say a lot of it is actually looking at job ads, what people want, what the skills required. I think you've got your own personal networks where you actually want to hear that. To be honest, as hard as it is, that process of actually going for the job and going for the interview, you actually learn about the skills you need. So that's for people looking for work. And then I think for people in work, really, it is about what your employer's telling you, what their strategy is and what they do. So I think it's an innate curiosity that I think you'll work out where you need the skills.
And then looking for those opportunities, and we heard from Hari that there's mining, she said nursing, aged care, but how do we actually know where these jobs are?
In terms of where the jobs are, I don't think it's a broken market. I think it's, there's a lot of visibility around job ads and where jobs are, whether it's via you know, it feels a bit odd saying this, having come from newspapers, but traditional job boards like Seek, but also LinkedIn and other networks and communities. So I think finding the roles or finding where the roles are isn't necessarily the problem. It's actually finding something that matches what you want to do, whether it's in terms of, you know, how it fits in with your life, if you've got caring responsibilities, or how it fits in with your skills. And then importantly, trying to go, well, what's my proposition in that role? How to bring my skills and experience?
And then is it about taking the skills that we have and potentially selling them in a different way?
So I think there's a few things on that one, because I think there's a bit of, selling your skills in a different way, but it's also selling yourself, your experience, your judgment. That's the bit that, not quite lacking, but that's one of the gaps when we talk to employers we hear most about. It is, I need people who are experienced, who can have critical reasoning and applied judgment, whether that's to AI, or have got soft human-centred skills in technology roles or digital roles. So it's actually as much about the skills you have, but it's also the experience you bring and how you can lead in a very different context.
Nick, one of the obstacles for changing mid-career is the job hunter saying, I don't want to start again. Mm. I don't want to go back to the beginning. What would you say to that?
Yeah, that's hard. That I can't think of anything more daunting than that. The only thing I could probably say to it is you have to start. I think if you really, since you are serious about switching careers, then it is about getting in there, starting, learning about the being curious about it. But I think the important thing, and we saw this in last year's research when we did the jobs research, was for people who think about switching a career or moving into a new job role, they actually think it's big, daunting, I need to get a lot of skills. The gap isn't that big in most cases. I think we worked out that to bridge the digital divide in terms of digital jobs, there was something like 300,000 people in terms of roles, the research suggested, that could move from what I would call, let's say, traditional or analog roles to digital roles with one or two short courses or microcreds. So that hill might not be as big as you think it is. It's a hill, not a mountain. So I would say that for that person who's feeling daunted, get in there, have a look at the research and just see how far you can get along the skills needed.
Take the job cut?
That's always going to be up to each individual to decide whether they can do that or they can afford that. For a lot of people, at least that we speak to, it really is divided. And, you know, you've got people with, you know, children, mortgages, particularly at that sort of mid-career level, very hard for them to take the job cut. Others are a little bit more, I've got different circumstances. I think if you really want to get into, since you want to get into a new career, do you want to switch jobs, you want to move into a different track, then I think there is a little bit of that. I think there's also some government policy that can help that, particularly where there are job shortages as well.
So let's go now to hiring managers. Who are these hiring managers that you speak of?
I think it's broad. Everything from the person who's going to manage the employee to the HR department to the boss, depending on how big the firm is. And I think there's a lot of what we see is great organisations have a very clear understanding of the hiring manager through the people and culture, through what they're telling the employee and the job experience. And there are a few where that's fractured. So I think, my view is that, anyone you speak to in an organisation is a hiring manager because they're all going to have a perception of you and, probably could sort of weigh into whether you're going to get the job or not get the job or how you fit in. But predominantly it's the person that you're going to be working for or the people and culture team.
What are you saying? What are they looking for in 2026?
So I think in 2026 what we're seeing is more, how can you fix my short-term need, my skills and experience I need right now? So it is a lot about coming in, doing a job or fixing a problem or growing something. I think growth is still to come because of the economic environment, but typically that's where it is. And so that's on the one thing. So do you have the skills and experience? And the other thing is, do you actually have the necessary experience and judgment and critical reasoning to actually sort of be really good at this job? So I think the skills are one thing. And AI skills are important, being OFA, but I think it's also that, do you bring an amount of critical reasoning? Do you bring an amount of ethical behaviour to the role? So I think there's a lot of that as well.
I wonder if a common refrain is, gee, it's actually hard to find good people.
Yeah, you hear that quite a lot. And I don't really know what that means. And typically, it will end up being answered a couple of ways, or probably three ways, I would say. One is, I can't find people that are experienced and got judgment and critical reasoning. I can't find people with the right skills. Or I can't find people like me. And unfortunately, a lot of it is I can't find people like me, as opposed to that, skills and experience. And I think that's probably where the people in culture teams and the hiring managers also need to be sort of very clear about what they want.
Okay, so we've described, if people are feeling like the job market is a bit tougher, yes, it is. That's been reflected in our data. So, and you've mentioned that when jobs are opening up, you might need to look at skill sets and maybe think about some micro-credentials or this always learning. Practically speaking, could you just run us through some things that you think job hunters would find beneficial in terms of those tools of the trade right now?
I would say that some of the most useful tools or useful things to do would be, one, embrace, if you feel like technology is getting away from you, embrace it, get in there. It ain't going away. The toothpaste is out of the tube, AI is there, learn it, use it in a very practical way. I think that's the first thing. The second thing is try and understand what you bring to each role. And I think that, and particularly those technology-based roles and what skills and experience you would bring. And I think learn, really, that's the big thing, because once you have the role, the learning doesn't stop. So actually getting to that, the case of that continuous learning or lifelong learning is actually really important, because, that mid-career professional who's looking for work now will land a job, but they also need to continue to develop their skills and experience, because it's also then about the next job or the next promotion. So I'd say they're the sort of three practical things. Learn it, work out what your unique proposition is in the context of the technology, and just be prepared to do everything you need to do to get into lifelong learning.
Look, I think this could be a whole separate episode, but if we are applying for jobs and there is AI baked into the process, do you have some advice on how to bring ourselves to this new form of process of job hunting?
Gosh, I think you're right. It's a very different world now, and I was speaking to a recruiter a few months ago, when he was talking about one of his candidates who'd set up an AI bot agent to actually do his job applications. He was sending out 200 a week. So I think it's on both ends of that. My advice on that is, first of all, understand how you're going to be found and what's going to work to actually give you the best chance. But at the same time, at some point, there's going to be a human at the end of this. Don't lose the authenticity in your own voice and what you're doing and how you're applying it. I think this is moving so fast that any advice I give today on that is going to be very different next week. But I would say that, at the end of the process, there's a human.
Thank you, Nick. Now, each week we have this segment, it's called Try This, and we ask our expert guests to nominate one thing our This Working Lifers can try out this week. And this idea of just doing one thing, because sometimes we get overwhelmed by the many things. So out of all the beautiful tips that you've shared, if you could just give me one specific thing we can try this week, what would that be?
If you're going for a role, rewrite the job ad. So sit there, look at the job ad and go, I know you're asking for somebody with technical experience in, technical experience in AI and the tools, et cetera. I'm going to rewrite this. And what you actually want is someone with, 20 years experience leading people who can actually train others in the use of this technology. So that would be one tip, because I think that gives you back agency into the process you're about to jump into.
Wonderful. Let's try that this week. Thank you, Nick.
Great. Thank you.
That's Nick Kohler, the CEO of RMIT Online. Thanks for listening to This Working Life. It was produced by Rob Kelly on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Nam, Melbourne. The actors that you heard at the top of the show are producer Rob and me, Lisa Leong. No real actors were harmed in the making of this. If you'd like to hear more from us, you can like or subscribe to our show on ABC Listen or anywhere you get your podcasts. And please rate and review us while you're there. I'm Lisa Leong, and until next time, love your work.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.